Welcome to the Overshare Show. I'm Toni, and today we're going to be talking about how to raise your children with feminist values. So I'm going to be interviewing Jennifer Baumgardner, who's a writer, an activist, a filmmaker, and she's also currently the executive director of the Feminist Press at CUNY. The reason why I wanted to interview Jennifer is that I've noticed that a lot of young women, especially those that actually have a voice in the media, have been rebelling against the idea of identifying as a feminist. And at first, this really disturbed me. And actually, I felt pretty enraged. I would think to myself, what's wrong with you, Taylor Swift? How can you not call yourself a feminist? If it weren't for feminism, you'd be writing songs about weaving baskets. But at the same time, there is a stereotype when it comes to feminism, and there are these cliches that exist. And maybe rather than forcing the identity on people and on young women and on men for that matter, we should really be espousing feminist values and the morality behind this movement. And that's what I really appreciated about Jennifer, is that she has this expansive and inclusive definition of feminism. And I really think that that's what the world needs at this point in time, because feminists are doing incredibly important work on the ground, you know, about women's health and the needs of women throughout the globe, where often the government and systemic institutions fail them. Without the work of the feminist agenda, I truly, truly believe the planet would suffer greatly. So we need to support them in a way that forces our collective psyche to understand that feminism is ultimately just a value system, one that honors men and women equally. And I think that most people, whether or not you specifically identify as a feminist, can agree with that, that equality is important in a functioning society. So I really enjoyed this conversation with Jennifer, and I do think that talking to our children about the values of feminism and really kind of opening up the dialogue and opening up the conversation of what that means to you and what that means to them personally is a huge step in the right direction, because the more our children, our little boys and our little girls, really genuinely embody these feminist values, I do think it'll have a positive impact on culture and will change the world. So I really enjoy talking to Jennifer, and I hope you enjoy. Thank you. Hi, welcome to the Overshare Show. Today, I'm with the wonderful Jennifer Baumgardner. So today, we're going to talk to her about raising our children with feminist values. And I wanted to start off by saying that I was telling my friend I was coming to meet you today, and she asked herself, am I a feminist? And she didn't know what that really meant, and she couldn't identify as one. And I felt like that was incredibly interesting, and I wanted to know what feminism means to you personally. And also, why do you think so many women have a problem identifying as one, like Taylor Swift, for instance, who would not call herself a feminist? So that's how I like to start.
Sure. Oh, I love talking about that. Okay. So I am a feminist, and I feel like I've been one since birth. That said, I don't think anyone needs to call themselves a feminist. And I think we usually come to that term through personal experience, and it's something you begin to own. And when you do own it, as opposed to having it just like foisted on you or nagging you into it, it's powerful, because then you really understand what you think it means. And so I think it's complex what it means. In a very basic sense, it's something almost everybody agrees with, which is a belief in the full political, social, and economic equality of all people. So that's just like, are you a good person? You probably believe in that. In this day and age. But really, it's so much more complicated, I think, because it really implies access to enough information and resources to make informed choices about your life. So it's not the choice you would make. It wouldn't be the choice to be a tomboy or, you know, versus be a princess. It'd be the fact that you had a choice. And then I think more, I really feel like it's evolved a lot in my own life. And I think more recently, I think feminism means that feminism as a movement says that you can bring all parts of yourself into the room. So there isn't anything that has happened to you or any part of you that isn't socially acceptable or that you're not allowed to own. And so, you know, for many people, part of what has happened to them is they've experienced rape or incest or abortion or infertility or abuse or eating disorders, or they have a gay parent or an alcoholic parent, or they have issues with their own sexuality. These are all parts of life. They're very, very common, but they're suppressed because we live in a really, we do live in a very sexist world still in some ways. And so I think we get messages that there are parts of us that we should keep secret because they're disgusting or abnormal. But feminism reveals that there is no normal. That the when we can become the fullness of ourselves, that's when we're the most powerful. And what I love about feminism as a movement is it really tries to create resources to enable people to tell the truth about their lives.
I really appreciate what you just said. And one question I had is, you mentioned that your own personal definition has evolved. So how did it start for you? I mean, I like the idea of you being a feminist since birth, but when did you start to feel interested in this as a movement or as your career, and how has it evolved? Like, what was the trajectory?
Well, when I was a little kid, my mom, so I'm 43, my mother...
You look great.
Thank you. It's radio, so everyone just has to buy that. So I was raised in Fargo, North Dakota. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, breadwinner dad, three daughters. But my mom was really being influenced by the feminist movement that was happening around her, and she had Ms. Magazine on the coffee table. And in Fargo, honestly, that was pretty radical. And so we had this object that would have, you know, lesbian on the cover or abortion on the cover. And so I grew up with these words that were feminist words, and I knew that they were powerful. And I had parents that wanted me to be attached to these ideas. And so that's why I say since birth. I think I was around it. But I think it was very inherited. Like, I didn't really have my own opinions about feminism. I just sort of thought there was a feminist opinion, and I tried to have that. So I was like, I'm pro-choice, you know, and it means this. But I didn't really know what it would mean. I didn't know what it would mean personally. I didn't even know anyone who – I didn't know I knew anyone who had even had an abortion, you know. But I was really a zealot about being pro-choice. As I got older, and I think it was when I started working at Ms. Magazine, I – finally felt like I had the right to come up with my own definition of feminism and to look at my own life for feminist guidance, as opposed to look at the lives of people who were a lot older than me. So I sort of saw them as the feminists, but they were born during a time when things were so different, so it wasn't really relatable. And when I started looking at my own life and trying to find what was feminist in it, what was sort of really empowered, what was really still the same as it was 50 years ago, and what did feminism mean to me? That was when I think I really understood or started calling myself a feminist for real. And interesting stuff came out of that, because I'm still super pro-abortion rights. Like, it's really one of my big issues. But I absolutely believe now that you can be pro-life and be a feminist. So it's like these ideas of what it means to be a feminist has evolved for me, in the sense that it used to be a laundry list of maybe beliefs or things you said you'd do, like don't shave or something. And now it's really far away from that.
Wow, that's so interesting. And I think this idea of identity, and so I'm going to identify as a feminist, and therefore I'm going to take the rhetoric and spout that, or I'm going to understand what it means to me. And that's why it was so sad for me when someone like Taylor Swift, who is this role model for all these young girls, was just like, I'm not a feminist, I don't need to be. And I think there is something interesting about current culture where it's not as obviously segregated as as it was years ago because of the feminist movement. So women aren't necessarily recognizing that it's still just as important, if not more important, because there's almost this subversive underlying systemic sexism that's being ignored.
Yeah. Well, I think Taylor Swift is interesting. I mean, I think a lot of celebrities or, you know, well-known people who seem very powerful and you're kind of like, she inspires me, she must be a feminist. One of the reasons they don't use the word is either because they haven't come to their own personal moment of where they would own it, because they knew what it meant to them. I think Beyonce has, but I don't think Taylor Swift has. But also because it does come with all of this baggage. Like, you know, you call yourself a feminist, and immediately, if you use feminism as one of your main identifiers, you are immediately going to attract a lot of lunatics who are going to have fights with you. And I think I think it can be strategic not to use that word and to live a feminist life, as she seems to be doing. Maybe, too, if she had a relationship with someone who called herself a feminist who she really related to, it would feel different. I think sometimes you look at who's calling themselves a feminist and you don't necessarily, either their purity or their strength or something about it is intimidating or off-putting, or you just don't see yourself in their example. And I think that can be a barrier to calling yourself a feminist. That's why, like, when people like Beyonce do use the term, because I think it shows the diversity and how personal it is and how much you can say, I'm a feminist as a wife. You know, that's kind of like one of the things people are criticizing her about. But I thought that was really beautiful, like what makes me think about both those roles.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think one of the points I really resonated with when you were talking about the idea of having a choice, you know, so I have a daughter, she's 3.5, and she loves everything feminine. You know, she loves baby dolls, she loves pink. And I reacted very strongly almost against that initially. And I realized that I was perpetuating the same paradigm by thinking things that were feminine were less than. Mm-hmm. And so if she liked traditionally girly things, she was less than.
Right.
And I think that, you know, there has been this almost like pendulum swinging to the opposite direction where to be a feminist, it's like you're not necessarily celebrating femininity and these like traditional feminine traits.
Right. I think we still overvalue masculine things. And so, you know, if you were someone, and it sounds like you were, who was athletic and you weren't drawn to those things, you probably got a certain amount of social approbation for, you know, being that way, being someone who could hang with the guys. And so therefore, you know, even subconsciously, that's something you realize has value. And it's disturbing, you know, to see. I think also as moms, it's disturbing. And I don't have a daughter, I have 2 sons. It's disturbing to see your kids do be different than you, too.
Right.
When you're like, are you rejecting me? Or am I wrong? Are you wrong? You know, it's hard to just let them be them. You know, you do you, I'll do me kind
right.
of thing. So that can be part of it, too, I think.
No, yeah, I totally agree. And one of the things that I'm most interested in is, how do we have men become feminists? And how do we raise our children to have these feminist values? And so you have 2 sons, which you mm-hmm. mentioned. How have you been talking to them or interacting with them to have these values that you have in a way that's organic and natural to them? And have you seen success doing that?
I have a lot of feminist men in my life, and they don't all call themselves feminists, but they're all really supportive of feminism and really it's not threatening to them. It's just sort of integrated in their lives, including my father and my husband, you know, like a lot of people. And whenever I do lectures, and I do them a lot on college campuses, there's always a lot of men in the audience too. And so I know that this is something that speaks to men for their own sake and also for the sake of the relationships they want to have with people or the relationships they already do. One of my favorite stories about how I think the world has changed is I'm married now, but my first son, I was a single mom for several years, and I was always like dragging my stroller down, you know, the subway stairs, and people help you sometimes and sometimes they don't. But one time I was really struggling, and this teenager who was kind of intimidating looking, like really like loose long pants and just sort of, you know, sullen looking, sullen teenage boy kind of thing, started walking towards me, and I'm, you know, struggling. And he came and he just took the stroller out of my arms and carried it down the stairs and set it at the bottom. And I said, thank you. And he said, I was raised by a single mom, ma'am. I mean, it was so polite. And I was like, God, he recognizes that I'm a single mom. And he was raised right. And I hope I can do that with my son. I hope my son is going to be witnessing this too. And he will one day be that kid who knows to help that woman and sees her. And so I think there are all these subtle but really profound ways that feminist values, men being able to be full human beings and compassionate and empathetic and still strong has permeated our culture. And I see examples of that all the time. With respect to my kids, you know, they're really funny and weird and like love musical theater already, which I know is not, you know, feminist, but it strikes me as like kind of a confident, you know, attitude that they, or maybe they just don't know that that's like associated with being girly or something. But, the thing that I noticed with them that I think is unique to our family or to their relationship with me is I work and talk every single day around them using words like abortion, rape, incest, like words that I think are whispered or not even mentioned probably in a lot of households. And I just talk about it because it's really what my work is. And, you know, it would be hard not to be talking about it. It'd be bizarre. But the older they get, the more they have questions about what these things actually are. And I've been surprised by how difficult it is for me to explain in a way that has any meaning. So the 9-year-old schoolie the other day said, I mean, I do feel like I'm raising feminist children in the sense that they're soaking in it. You know, they're just like around it, but they're allowed to have their own opinions about it. But he said, you know, I know that you're very pro-abortion and I want to support what you support. But when you explain to me what it is, it sounds like children should be against it. And there was this like really wonderful logic to what he was saying. And I felt like my response didn't sound that logical because it was more subtle and it required, you know. And so I said, you know, women have four times as many pregnancies in their lifetime than they have children on average. And some of those pregnancies go away from miscarriage. Some become live births like you. And some go, sometimes they choose not to have the pregnancy. And that's what abortion is. And it's just one of many options and outcomes. And it's been going on. You know, I was trying to like make it just sound like a little less like we're murdering children here, you know, and you need to be advocating for your people. But it was one of those like, you know, classic moments as a parent where you're like, I'm saying too much and at the same time, not enough. And so it's really made me think like, wow, maybe I can just learn more from Schoolie about what he's thinking.
Right.
As opposed to like jump in with my like argument so quickly.
Right. That's really an amazing story. Those were both like the first story about the kid on the subway made me want to cry. And that is so fascinating, his understanding of what's going on with your work and how he has this instinct to want to support you, but then he has his own opinions about it. And I think, I mean, that's kind of what you were talking about before with choice, is that is in its own way a feminist value. And even if that's something that he has an opinion about, the main thing is that you can't dictate how other people live their lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the, you know, the point about the pro-choice argument that just like needs to keep being said is that you never don't have to make that decision, right, but you can't legislate that on other humans. Mm-hmm. So do you feel that, you know, as a mother, like what kind of advice would you give to other mothers to help them, you know, raise their children with these types of values or at least the sensitivity to women and the plight of the female race?
Well, I think the biggest thing is children see everything. So it's sort of not so much what you say, but what you do. So I know my kids have seen things that I'm not even aware of that I'm doing that are sending them mixed messages and confusing them and maybe aren't really living up to what I say I believe. And they're also seeing things that I'm not aware of that are maybe instilling compassion from them, you know, about women. I mean, in our family, it's interesting because I'm the bread earner. And my son, who has a different father, his father doesn't drive. And so he sees, you know, this that his mom has a career and also she's the one that knows how to drive. And so there's all these sort of like different things that aren't the traditional gender within our family that just sort of played out that way that I think helps them understand that their gender is not a script for anything. That said, we're all, you know, socialized certain ways and we have things that we like. And I try not to worry too much with my kids about what they like. I don't, but it might be that I'm just like opting out or I'm a lax parent. I used to think I was like, I have it figured out, but now I'm wondering if I'm just sort of checked out sometimes about these things. But they love guns and they love, you know, thinking about scary, violent things. And I just kind of go with it. You know, and so I don't know if that's feminist or not feminist, but I feel like what I try to do that I feel the best about is I do take seriously their emotional experiences. Like I don't talk them out of the things that they say. So for instance, around this abortion thing, I didn't say, no, you have to be pro-choice.
Right.
That's what our family is or whatever. I really think that there's an opportunity for me to learn from him too.
Right. And I think, you know, this idea of gender and how we espouse certain values on specific gender, like, okay, men are strong. Is it necessarily strong to get angry at a football game and punch someone? Is right. that exhibiting strength or is being emotionally vulnerable and telling someone how you feel, which is a classic feminine, yeah. you know, stereotype, is that true strength? And so I think having this conversation with our children about, you know, maybe having a different value system for masculinity and femininity helps them explore both these sides of themselves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I do think we all have the masculine and feminine sides, and I'm really a big believer in just the fact that we need both and that they work together and in all these different ways, and everybody has kind of a different composition of their masculine and feminine sides and different things that when we suppress either of them, we're not our full selves, for sure. It's interesting to me what you say about strength because when I think when people get, including myself, when people get angry or punch things or whatever, you know, the anger is an energy and it feels good in it and it helps protect us from this much harder thing, which is pain and sadness and fear. And so people who are really angry in an aggressive way, you know, tend to be men. And people who are really angry in a passive aggressive way tend to be women. And underneath all of that is this pain and a fear that I guess we won't be heard or taken care of. And, you know I have that in me. And, you know, that's the thing you keep, I suppose, as you grow and your parenting that you attempt to model for your child is you know, that the anger is an expression, but underneath it is something that probably really needs to be looked at. And but the child needs safety in order to look at it.
Right. I think that's a really interesting point because in my experience in life, I find that men express anger and women express themselves through tears.
Yeah.
You know, and often
or manipulation. Or manipulation. I'm just saying all these terrible things about women, but yeah.
But there's a lot more crying. I've seen my female friends cry a lot more. And I think a lot of that kind of starts in childhood where women are allowed to keep crying.
Yeah.
And where men, you know, oh, don't cry, you're a big boy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because the crying act is like very victimizing. It's internal. You like cower your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then anger, you're broadening your chest. It's just in a different body language. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's like from such an early age, we are socializing, conditioning men to like seek power through aggression and for women not to necessarily seek power and to like almost victimize themselves through this type of processing. And it's all, like you said, it's the same emotion, which is like dealing with like fear and insecurity. But the way that we're processing them, I think.
Yeah, one is taking up space.
And the other is.
And the other is retreating. Yeah, cowering. I think that's really interesting and true. I think that's really, really true. And the crying is so interesting too, because I'm a firm believer in the it's all right to cry thing, but it's sort of how you cry and to what purpose and whether you're really truly like expressing yourself honestly with your crying or some sort of manipulation.
Right.
Or anger, just really, really thwarted anger. I mean, I think I at 43, I still feel like I'm like barely scratching the surface of my emotional life and just understanding it, you know.
Right.
So there's a lot there that hopefully kids, you know, nowadays will have more access to at a younger age.
And the fear is that if it's the fall to reaction, I know that I've been in the situation where it was like a business situation and I was being attacked and I was so upset and my eyes started to water.
Yeah.
And that was because that had been like a common reaction to feeling upset. And that was such a disempowering, humiliating moment. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't let them see me cry.
Right.
But I almost did. And it was obvious. You know, you can tell when someone's about to cry. So it's just, to me, I think a lot about my daughter and how am I going to raise her to, you know, be a quote unquote strong woman. And what does a strong woman really look like? Mm-hmm. Like for you, what is your understanding or your ideal or utopia strong woman?
Well, let's see. I have a lot of women I really admire. I think I do admire women who are direct. And I know that's not something that everybody can do. Be really direct, because sometimes I think it feels just, you know, but I admire that a lot rather than indirect or passive aggressive. And I admire women who can say something in the moment, even if it's upsetting and they're upset, but not let it fester or go further than that and then be able to move on to that moment of like, and now we're okay. So that's one thing. I do think that's powerful. And I think that's owning your power when you can do that. I think that women who, I have a lot of ideas in a more generalized way. Like I think working in the nonprofit sector or working in helping professions, I think women are we're overrepresented in those worlds. And they're very important worlds, but the reason I don't like it is because I think that it takes, there's a certain amount of like taking responsibility for things, for changing things that comes out in the corporate world and in non-helping professions and in leadership professions. And so I think that's very important for women to be in those zones. So I guess I also find a very powerful woman would be in that zone. But what you said about vulnerability is also very true. I think being able to be, to me, being vulnerable would be able to be a full human being, like have everything, every part of me be able to be in play in my career or whatever, and not have lies or secrets or things, you know, that I have to do to like deal with my stress that are unhealthy or whatever. That to me is an empowered woman too. And I also think there's a kindness. Like I've talked about all this directness, but I really do love about women and about feminism in the terms of how feminists tend to network, that the idea is that you could just call somebody and ask them for something and that they would probably just say, yes, you're allowed to make these requests and people will help you. Ask and you shall receive, I think, is a real feminist. I know it's the Bible, but it's a really feminist ethic, and it's happened to me, and I pass it on. You know, I do it back to people, and that is a very powerful feeling of being able to give to someone or to be able to ask and have your request met.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And so one other thing I wanted to ask you is dealing with gender and the media and the influence of mm-hmm. culture and cartoons and movies. I mean, how do you deal with your own children, and mm-hmm. what advice would you give to parents? Because I've seemed to at least witness kind of two extremes, people that aren't aware of feminism or feminist values at all and are kind of unconsciously propagating sexist ideology, and then those that are so hyper PC, it's almost like the other side of the spectrum that's just as dangerous, mm-hmm. you know, because they're being so overly conscious that they're not necessarily allowing their kid to experience the world or even trusting them to internalize the world.
Right.
So what advice do you give for parents on how to deal with culture and the media influence, and how have you dealt with it yourself?
Well, I think what you say is so interesting ideally you would expose your children to things but teach them how to understand the information. So I've definitely exposed my children to a lot of stuff. I don't know that I've done a good enough job making sure that they have the tools to understand what they were exposed to, but I have not limited them too much. That said, I find that because we read a lot in my family, I feel pretty good about where we're at, even though they also watch a lot of movies, TVs, et cetera, screen time things, because books are more, and I guess this brings me back to my job of being a publisher, books are more complicated. They're very personal, and you can read to your child and go deep into a world together. It's not passive. You're hearing, it's yours passing through your voice, and you're interpreting it with them. And you have this kind of communal experience, but it's in each of your brains sort of privately. And you go into this other world and you have an opportunity to experience someone else's reality and develop ethics based on that and compassion. So you can kind of imagine what it would be like to be these other people. And also exercise, I think, some of the bad, hard things that are going on in your own life. So about a year ago, my son, this sounds trivial, but it was actually awful, got this terrible haircut. It was all like, you know, just like it was a weird thing that made it happen. And then he got this terrible haircut and he was just humiliated. He had beautiful long hair. And he just didn't feel like he even saw himself. He didn't feel like he was himself. He felt very self-conscious and like people were staring at him, that whole thing. And we started reading Wonder, which is this incredible book about this boy who was born with many, many congenital birth defects. And he had been homeschooled. And finally his parents were like, we have to enroll him in school. It's just like, we can't keep protecting him in this way. It's because it's ultimately not protective. And so he goes to school and you see him going through middle school and being stared at, and just, it's a beautifully written book. It's like a laugh and a cry on every page. I really loved it. But it helped Schoolie so much deal with how self-conscious he was feeling, and to see this little person persevere but also have bad days and have things happen, and then we can really respond, and it's not really about Schoolie, but it is about Schoolie. It was an amazing moment. And so I feel like when I think of the media, I'm not that scared of it. And I think it's because I, you know, have always loved TV and movies, and because I've always loved books. And I think the books are infinitely more powerful. I mean, they're not as direct, but they stick with you in this totally different way.
Right. And I think this idea of teaching through narrative and storytelling,
that's how we learn.
It's so powerful. Mm-hmm. And every night when I put my child to bed, that's what I do. I make up stories and tell her. And I try to have a moral with everyone.
Oh, that's great. And you make them up. I love that.
I make them up.
My sons ask me to make up stories all the time. And sometimes I'll really be on a roll and I'll be like, I'm really good at this. I should write this down and sell it and make $1 million. And then other times I'm like, this one's not working out. And I've tried to write down what I've said. And they are very in the moment, because writing is just very different than speaking.
Right, than channeling from the story gods. Well, I really appreciate this conversation. I think that, you know, you're a beautiful person and you've really brought up some amazing, interesting points. I hope everyone out there, you know, thinks about this in terms of their own parenting and how they can raise their children with feminist values, because that's, I think, how we're going to actually change sexism for the future, is if our children respect women as truly equals.
I couldn't agree more. And respecting men to be able to become full human beings too.
Exactly. We have to do it together.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Bye.